If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? Everyone, Jeremy here, and guys, I'm very, very excited for today's guest because he's a three-time Mr. Universe, three-time Mr. Olympia, and bodybuilding legend known for his aesthetics, and bodybuilding.com has called him the most perfect bodybuilding body ever. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life show, Frank Zane.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely, Frank. Thank you so much. And I just, on a personal level, have to thank you. I'm 33. I started working out when I was 17, and I had read an article by you, gosh, maybe like 20 years ago at this point, where you talked about how you tracked your training in a notebook. And I became absolutely maniacal about tracking every rep, you know, every poundage, everything about it. And that was really one of the secrets to me, you know, getting myself to the fitness level I'm at. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I got into that habit after, well, when I graduated from college. I was a chemistry major and, you know, we kept logbooks of what we did. And so I just applied that to my training and recorded pretty much all of my workouts from about age 22 onward. I published those I had a book called Personal Training Diaries that's been out in two different editions, which a lot of that is tracked in there. But I found it useful to do that.
Well, that book and also Dave Draper's Brother Iron, Sister Steel are two books I've read, you know, many, many times in the bodybuilding world. Well, I guess then taking a look at it then, Frank, like for you, you know, you're originally an East Coast guy. I'm here in New Jersey. I know you're originally from Pennsylvania. You grew up in a time period where bodybuilding didn't have the popularity it does now. And I know like there was Steve Reeves and things like that during that time period. But I guess what drew you to, you know, the bodybuilding arena, you know, during that time period?
At first, it was self-defense because I grew up in a tough coal mining town. And it was my younger brother was a bit, you know, said whatever he wanted to people. And I ended up protecting him most of the time. So I discovered basically weight training at that time. I was about 14 and I started working out and I made progress right away. In 2 weeks, I had lats. And so I started wearing tight shirts and I never had any fights after that. It sort of scared everybody off.
Were you out in like, I know Pennsylvania pretty well. Were you out in like the Lackawanna area or whereabouts were you?
Near Wilkes-Barre, which is south of Scranton, about 20 miles.
I'm very familiar. We used to spend my summers there every summer. It's where I camped as a kid.
Where did you camp?
We camped, I think it was called Lake Ariel out in that area.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
It's by Marshall's Creek in that area.
Oh, I think I know about where that is, yeah. I spent a lot of time at Boy Scout camp, Camp Akahila in the Poconos. So that wasn't that much further, I think, from where you're talking about.
So you mentioned your chemistry degree. You were actually a school teacher for a bunch of years, you know, in the beginning of your bodybuilding career. And for myself, that was also my first career too, was teaching. And I guess like looking at it, you know, how did you, I guess, kind of manage those two things? And when did you know that like, you know, that bodybuilding was going to become a career at, you know, at a time period where it was kind of becoming a new career? Like it hadn't really been one yet.
Well, I was a mathematics teacher primarily for 13 years, and I ended up teaching in Los Angeles City Schools. And after 8 years there, I took sabbatical leave and wrote a book, got it published, and then just never went back. I made a living as a professional bodybuilder at that time. Usually, that really wasn't a profession you could have up until that time. You could open up, you know, title winners would maybe open up a gym. But I figured, well, let's see what I can do with this. And my wife said to me, you know, there are plenty of gyms around, but there's not enough instruction around about what to do correctly. Mm-hmm. And so we basically, starting in 1980, opened up what we called Zane Haven in Palm Springs. And we were there for about 7 years. And then we moved to a larger location where we did live-in bodybuilding seminars. And then in 1998, we moved to the San Diego area. And I have a fully equipped gym here, but we don't put people up. People come here and I teach them how to train correctly. And been doing that since 1980 at this location. Actually, no, since 1998 in this location.
That's so vital too, because I know I've watched tons of your videos around like how to do things right. And I guess like looking at that then, because you know, you do see a lot of people, especially since fitness is so popular now, doing a lot of things in the gym, and sometimes you're kind of cringing watching it, how they're doing things. I guess for you, how did you, you know, start learning a lot of those early techniques, and why did you start focusing so much on the technique?
Well, I just wanted to spend my time doing what worked, you know, how it felt. I got a good workout. I got a pump from the exercise. And then by taking photos on a periodic basis, I was able to see what I look like and track my progress. And at that time, I discovered competition. Actually, I went in my first contest. That was 18 in near Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it's funny how it, when people say things to you that influence you. And at that time, Bob Hoffman was at a meet that I was competing in. It was my first bodybuilding contest. And I was pumping up backstage, and Hoffman came over to me and he said, young man, if I had a physique like yours, I'd walk around with my shirt off all the time. I don't know if he said that to everybody, but he said it to me, and I was really impressed by that. And so I just continued to do it, and I entered contests, and, you know, didn't win many of them at first, but then I started to do better, and then eventually it was just one contest every autumn, usually Mr. America. And then I won that in 1968. And then Mr. Universe a week later in Miami, and was able to beat Arnold Schwarzenegger in that contest. And then moved to California after that in 69 and got a job teaching as well, because it still wasn't at the point where you could support yourself by just being a bodybuilder. But after teaching for a while, I wrote some courses and had mail order business, and that got better and better. And then finally in 1977, was able to retire from that. And then we started writing books and publishing that. And that's been that way ever since.
It sounds like you've always had a little bit of a, you know, entrepreneurial gene in you.
Yeah, I didn't like working for other people so much. I mean, I enjoyed the act of teaching, but not in the public schools, because there's always somebody telling you what you should be doing. I didn't like that. I think I knew what to do without being told all the time. So that's how it started.
Well, I guess then during a time period where, you know, like it was what we call the golden age of bodybuilding, and, you know, people hadn't focused, I guess, as much on mass now, but it had started a bit during that standpoint. Why did you focus so much on aesthetics? I know, I believe it was yourself and Serge Oliva that had, you know, two of the smallest waists in the bodybuilding world at that point. I guess, why was focusing on aesthetics so important to you?
Well, it was my strong suit. I mean, I really have a small bone structure, and I realized that I couldn't really get to be that big. I remember in 1982, I competed at 200 pounds, and I really was a bit too blocky at that weight. And so it wasn't until I came down to around the 190-pound mark that I was able to really, win the top titles. Weighing a little over 190, it was when I won my last Olympia in 1979. So I just was able to focus on what I was best at. Fortunately, I was able to discover that and took it from there.
I guess like looking at it, like when you're looking at a bodybuilding competition, like how you look on stage is important, but also like how you pose and, you know, how your routine is actually structured is super important as well. I guess when you look at it, you know, how did you tend to structure your routines so that they would also help to show all of your best qualities?
Well, I practiced it a lot and went in a lot of competitions and learned from that. And then basically in the early to mid-70s in Southern California, it was pretty much myself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Franco Colombo, who were on top of bodybuilding. We dominated the 70s. And I got a lot of out of that association. You know, we trained often together and critiqued each other's posing, and it was very helpful.
And when during that time period, I guess, did you start using, you know, you're very famous for the vacuum pose. I guess, when did that start coming into your routine?
I think around 1970. Mm. I remember I did that pose in the 1970 Mr. Universe, which I was competing, and Schwarzenegger was competing in the pro division of that. And I did the vacuum pose in the middle of my routine, and he said, you know, that's your best pose. You should do it last. And so I did. And I just did it that way ever since. You know, you want to leave them with something to remember. It's called the recency effect.
Mm.
And so, you know, you leave them with that image. And so, you know, it helped.
You mentioned Franco Colombo and you mentioned Arnold, and I feel like a lot of people are, you know, familiar with them, not just because of what they've accomplished, but also because of the movie Pumping Iron and things like that. And I guess in terms of, like, you know, being with that group of guys, what was it like, you know, pushing each other and stuff like that? Because I know for myself, some of my best training was when I had people that would, you know, work as hard and push as hard as I wanted to in the gym. What was it like, I guess, training with people that were that level of intensity?
Well, it wasn't so much that I trained with these guys. I did occasionally, not really that often, but just being in the gym at the same time. Gold's Gym at that time, the late 60s, was really a hotbed of bodybuilders who were really interested and advanced enough to be there. Like Dave Draper, for example, was working out all the time, worked out with him, you know, quite a bit. Arnold, myself. It was just a good place to be at that time because bodybuilding was really taking off at that point. It still wasn't, you know, got the acclaim that it has today, but it was just starting and it was a really a good time to be involved with it.
Well, that 77 Olympia was the first of three in a row that you won, Frank. I guess, like, what was that, you know, really experience like winning that the first time? And then I can't imagine to repeat something like that because it's just everybody's kind of pushing to get that little bit extra. So I guess in terms of that, what was it like winning that first Olympia? And then how do you keep that up for two more years after that?
Well, I think I should have won it in 1976 too because I was in incredible shape that year, but I came close. And then just 77.
Was that the year that Colombo won?
Yeah, that was the first year he won it. And then after that, you know, I was right there for 77. And then 78, I was approved. And 79, I was even better. That was my streak those 3 years. So it was good timing. But, you know, I worked hard at it. It paid off.
I guess in terms of that, then, like, to really compete and win at that level, like, you know, I guess what is your concentration and what is your, like, program have to be like? You know, like, how many hours are you spending on this? And, like, what kind of time are you spending on this to make this go right?
Well, prior to competition, maybe like the last 2 months, I'd go to the gym twice a day, and it would, each time would be about an hour of training, usually 3 days out of four. The thing is, you don't have to spend a lot of time in the gym. You have to make your time count. And so when I went to the gym, I really didn't talk to anybody. I just focused on what I was doing. I went at times when the gym wasn't crowded so I could be that way. And, you know, because the focus is really everything. I think that's the main thing about training correctly. It's the focus that gets you there. You know, the focus means, you know, doing one thing at a time totally, not being distracted by other things around you. And so that was always my strong point. I'm very, very focused on things like that, especially in the training.
I love that. I was often guilty of wearing headphones that weren't plugged into anything because people just tend to leave you alone so you can get your stuff done.
That's a good idea. I did that too.
I guess then in terms of, like, looking at that concentration and that intensity, like, you know, in terms of, like, bodybuilding really being a solo sport, like, how did you continue to drive yourself to go for that next rep, to go for, you know, that level of training? Like, where did you get that intensity and that desire to push like that from?
Well, it was having the competitions coming up. You know, I mean, it's like the contests were, let's say, early part of October. So for September, August, and July, I was in high gear training for that. And then the 3 months before that, which would be April, May, and June, I was preparing for the hard training. So I had like a 6 month period. And when I retired from teaching school, I was able to do that full time. And that made a lot of difference. So those 3 years I won, basically, I was truly a professional bodybuilder. Before that, I had a full time teaching job. You know, everybody else that was competing pretty much didn't. You know, Arnold was on Colombo. They were getting paid by Weider just to work out. Do advertisements for him. And I didn't have that luxury. So I had to make it work. But I did, you know, pretty disciplined that way. Plus, I went to school for earning the California Life Teaching Credential, that eventually master's degree in psychology. So it's a full schedule.
When you look back at that golden era of bodybuilding, Frank, like, what do you most remember? What's most memorable or what stands out in your mind the most?
Probably winning the competitions. You know, the events surrounding competing, and that was the main thing. You know, mm-hmm. When you got right down to the wire, you prepared, you did everything you could, and then pulling it off on stage. Sometimes Absolutely. It went better than others.
You mentioned the winning. The streak was 77, 78, and 79. And then in 1980, you didn't win that year. You had a really big challenge where you had like lost 15 pounds, you'd had an accident. I guess in terms of like looking at that, how do you, you still came back from that and competed, which I just find so impressive. I guess, what was your comeback like from that to really make that go right and still, you know, make it to Olympia that year?
Well, it was harrowing. I think, you know, you're a genius in hindsight. Best thing I could have done would have been not go in it that year. But I let people talk me into it. And actually, Arnold trapped me into going with that. I didn't know who was going to compete. We used to go to him for advice all the time. The guy, after he stopped competing after 1975. And I asked him, I said, what do you think, Arnold? He said, I'd go to Australia and defend your title. My doctor told me, you know, what's he know about training for bodybuilding shows, that I'd be okay to do it. And so I did. You know, it would have been better not just to take that year off, but it's hard to know what to do when you're in a situation like that. Plus, I already had my plane ticket, so I figured, what the hell, I'll do it. But for the next year, I didn't compete. You know, and that would have been the year. I mean, I think I could have walked away with the title that year. Would have been in the best shape of my life, but, you know, it didn't work out that way. You know, it's all a learning experience. I can't say, you know, I regret any of it because, you know, what happened is what happened. And, you know, I learned as a result of it.
I guess like looking at it then, you know, like fitness has been a lifelong thing for you, Frank. Like how has your routine changed as you've gotten older and how is the way your body has responded to that changed over the years?
Well, I'll be 78 in about a month. And so my training is, as long as I do upper body work one day a week and I do a lot of walking, my legs have always been a strong point. And so, you know, I keep it up and I'm on a good, pretty good diet all the time. So I'm not trying to break any records. I just like to get a pump in my workouts, which I manage to do. I do like two sets of each exercise. I have a lot of machines in my gym, which I like to use. I stretch between sets and I'm regular in doing it. You know, make sure that I'm always training. I don't get sick very often, so I'm able to keep up my schedule.
Have you found like stretching has gotten more important for you as you've aged? I know for myself, like even after 30, like it's become very important that I have a great stretching routine as part of my fitness routine.
I've pretty much always done it ever since I was competing. I'd do a set and then hold a stretch that stretched the body part. I'm working for 15 seconds and I've just continued to do it. So it's nothing different, but it does enhance your workout. You know, it sort of maintains your pump after you do your set. It's like extending the exercise in itself without actually doing it. So I found it very helpful.
I guess like looking at, you know, modern day bodybuilding, Frank, you know, you're still very plugged in what's going on in the world out there. I guess, how do you feel about, you know, the current state of bodybuilding? You know, the guys are a lot bigger. It's not as much about aesthetics as it used to be. I guess in terms of like your viewpoint and what you trained for, how do you feel about the current state of bodybuilding?
Well, you know, the standard is set by who's on the scene. Mm-hmm. And that's who's on the scene right now. It's the monsters. There's a brief period of respite from that, from 1976 through 1983, when all the winners for the Mr. Olympia were below 200 pounds. And then in 1984 came Lee Haney. Mm-hmm. And he set the standard, you know, big guy, a lot of muscle. He set the standard for the, the next 8 years or so. And then Dorian Yates and then Ron Coleman, all these guys are just huge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's who's on the scene and that's who sets the standard. So until somebody comes around, you know, there is this one guy, I saw him on the internet, a guy from Australia. I think his name is Steve Jones. Mm. And the guy has like a tiny waist and really good proportions, weighs about 220 now. Somebody like that, if he could gain national prominence, which just maybe would involve coming to California and start competing here. I think he could maybe help turn the tide around. You know, somebody like Steve Reeves, for example. But you don't see these guys around anymore. And even when they do come up, like the Mr. Olympia, there's the regular category where everybody's like 270 at 5 foot. And then there's a category for 212 pounds. Even though those guys do win, they don't get any kind of publicity recognition for it. It's mm-hmm. all gone in the direction of bigger is better.
Yeah.
Bigger is better. Freakier muscle is better. You know, in the words of one guy called Wayne D'Amelia, who was a guy who sponsored a lot of contests, still does, the promoter. He said, Wayne, I don't mind paying $200 for seat up front, but when I do, I want to see freaky muscle. And it seems like that's gotten to be, you know, what bodybuilding is all about anymore. You know, another point, and if you think about this, we're at a, let's say at a contest, let's say in the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas, where they have the Olympia every year, where are most people viewing the contest from? Not from up front, not from the first 10 rows. They're viewing it from way further back. Now, what stands out from way further back? Let's say you have on stage Lou Ferrigno, not that defined, but he has, you know, some muscularity. And then Danny Padilla, who's, you know, a midget compared to him. He's like 5'2". Louis is 6'5", and he has a lot of definition. But seen from way back, you don't see any of that detail. Mm-hmm. You only see that from up close. Contests are judged basically from further back. And so that's why the size stands out. You know, if you're at a contest, you basically, you, the big eyes are the ones that stand out because you can't see the detail. And a lot of them have the detail too, but if they have the detail plus they're really huge, you know, that's just the standard these days. To tell you the truth, I'm just glad I won the Olympia when I did. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I'd have a chance these days. Oh, God. I'm just so glad.
Personally, I like that standard a lot better because I know just being a small guy myself, like the sculpting, the aesthetic quality just matters a lot more to me, right? Like, because at the same time,
yeah,
like
you can relate to it.
At the same time, I've always questioned, like, you know, like a guy of that size, you know, because a lot of, you know, they're 5'10", somewhere around there. And you mentioned they're like 275. Like, how do you get through your daily life like that too at the same time? You know what I mean? So to me, I look at it as if you're more aesthetic like you were or like some of the smaller guys tend to be, it's also a quality of life thing and also a bigger life thing. You know what I mean?
Well, that is their daily life, mm-hmm. being that way. A lot of them have endorsements and, you know, they're like that. They do that for a living.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's funny, at my peak, Frank, I'm 5'7". I was 205 was the most I ever was at 8% body fat. But now I'm like 180. And it's, you go more for aesthetic and you go for the ability to do things in life has always been my viewpoint on it.
One thing I learned was don't count on numbers to tell you what you look like.
Right.
So many people are talking about measurements and what they weigh and percentage of body fat. That's not the thing in itself. Those are just description of it. What you really need to do, and this is what I did, is take a lot of photos. If you get a lot of photos taken of yourself, because that's the only way you really see yourself. You know, think about it. You never see yourself that way. When you look in the mirror, you see yourself backwards. Now, that's not what you look like.
Yeah.
You know? It's only in a photograph that you see the way yourself, the way other people do, and the way you're viewed in competition. And so I made it a habit to do that. I had countless photographs taken. You know, we'd go out on the weekend. My wife would take photos. She was an excellent photographer. And I just have a lot of color slides, and I was able to study those and see the weak points and the strong points and make adjustments. You know, that's how I got my feedback.
I love that. Well, I've heard you mention somewhere before, Frank, and I absolutely love this, that you've said your life motto is that I live my life by dreams and omens. Could you tell us a bit more about what that means? I just think it's a beautiful way to live your life.
Well, you know, at a time I was really involved in dream work, and you get a lot of dreams are trying to tell you something, the pictures of feelings. I don't really rely on that very much, nor omens, but basically I just pretty much, you know, try to pay attention as much as I can, what's going on while I'm awake, and stay on a routine of, you know, eating good and training regularly. And at this point in my life, I'm really not interested in making progress. You know, I'll be happy if I can stay the same.
Sure.
You know, that would be great if I could just stay the way I am now. I'd be happy with that. But, you know, staying the same isn't easy.
100%. Nothing stays the same forever. It's, you know, always changing.
Yeah, well, you know, I do things to try to slow down the aging process, you know, like deep relaxation, meditation, getting restful sleep, regular workouts, stretching, all that, doing aerobic activity, walking. It's just, you know, my lifestyle. So I'm glad to be able to do it.
Absolutely. Well, Frank, we took a few listener questions for you because our listeners were just super excited to get a chance to learn from you today. And we have a question here from Tommy Trelivas, who actually owns the gym I go to over here called Top Shelf Fitness. And he wants to know, when you're looking at smaller gyms versus like big box gyms, in terms of like, how does a smaller gym, you know, keep afloat and grow when we have a lot of these larger commercial gyms that don't always have, I guess, the same like level of equipment and stuff like that?
I really don't know, because I have a smaller gym. It's 600 square feet, but what's in there is really good equipment, mm-hmm. that machines have a tremendous feel to them. If you have gyms like that with people who are really interested in that, I mean, they appeal to the masses who aren't really interested in training. I mean, you can go to like a 24-hour fitness. It's people sitting on the machines texting. You know, I mean, I think
take
a lot
their
of times,
phones away, Frank.
Well, don't even let them in. I think I had this idea. It was basically called the Fitness Riot Squad. The concerned people, like maybe former Marines, advanced bodybuilders, go into gyms. And if people are not training seriously, you know, you cause a small riot so that if they do it, would you threaten them that if you find out about that again, you'll be back. Scare them into doing the right thing. I don't know. You know, I think the main thing is gyms are going to be the way they are. Go there when there's not many people there so you can train hard and you don't have to put up with distractions. That's what I always did. You know, even back in those days, like in the late 70s, I trained at gym, Gold's Gym. There's another one, another gym in Santa Monica I trained at. Plus, I had my own gym in Palm Springs at our Zane Haven facility. So I had like four gyms I was training at. And I was always there when nobody else was, primarily, so I could have access to the equipment and not be distracted.
Absolutely. We have one more listener question for you, Frank. And Steve Novotny wants to know, as a young man, who was your bodybuilding inspiration? Who did you look up to?
I had two idols. One was Steve Reeves from an early age. I saw the Hercules movies when I was a senior in high school, and that was always inspiring to me. And then Larry Scott later on. And I got to meet and know both of them, which was fortunate. I just learned a lot from their demeanor. I was at 1965 Mr. Olympia at Brooklyn Academy of Music when Larry Scott won it the first time, and it was awesome. I mean, I never heard an audience cheer that loudly. And he was just fantastic. And I was actually competing in Miss Universe that year. And I had a chance to talk to him backstage. And I was really amazed seeing him up close, because you didn't see this from further back, but basically he had these lines in all of his muscles. It was really something. And I got to talk to him about California, because I was, you know, on my way to go there. I was in Florida at the time. But that was really, really an experience at the time. I learned a lot from competing. That's really what kept me going, was wanting to win the Olympia. You know, I think I entered it 10 times and won it 3. And some other times I might have won it like 76, maybe 83, maybe 82. But, you know, it was a goal. And I think that's the important thing, is to have a goal. And if it's a tangible goal, like a competition, that's the strongest goal you can have. Otherwise, you might be training for yourself, or maybe to take photos. Not as severe a type of training as it is for competition. And really, I think that's what helped me make the most improvements, was I competed for 23 years, from 1960 to 1983. It's what moved me, you know, to keep moving forward.
Very cool. Well, just as we're coming down for a landing here, Frank, like, if you could be the one to define what your legacy looks like, and what does that legacy look like?
I think it was to be a good teacher for the sport. And my publications are directed toward that. You know, I have like 6 publications in print right now. And my main one is called the Zane Bodybuilding Manual. It's a massive compilation of 436 pages, over 500 photos of pretty much everything I know about bodybuilding. Then I have training manuals too, one called 91 Days of Your Body, which takes you through 3 months of workouts of what to do every day and what to eat. So it's providing good instruction for people who want to know how to do it correctly. They just basically need to consult my publications, because I have nothing in it other than providing correct information. You know, I mean, I do make a living from it, but that's not the only reason I do it. It's also to put stuff out there that is helpful for people. So that's my aim.
I can tell you, as one person myself, Frank, like, you've had a huge effect on my life, and one of the, you know, the people that have vicariously taught me everything I've learned about fitness. So I just really appreciate you being the person willing to do that and be out there doing that.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I enjoy it.
Well, Frank Zane, thank you so much for hanging out with me today on the Create Your Own Life show. I know I learned a ton. Our audience learned a ton. If people want to find out more about you and check out everything that you're doing, Frank, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, my website is frankzane.com. And everything there you need to know to get in touch with me or to order products, goods, and services is right there. So it's all on the internet.
Very cool. Frank Zane, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Anytime.